Good morning. It's Paul. It's Thursday, October 24th, and it's just past 8 o'clock. I dropped the boys off. We were 2 minutes late. Oh. But it wasn't a big deal. The teachers were actually just arriving. So, I said everyone's late. Oh, they're saying everyone's late. It's a Thursday. We were so close this morning. I had their breakfast ready. We got everything set up. But when we woke them up, even though they got 10 hours, they were still inert. You gotta shake them. You can't just talk to them. You gotta shake them, not violently. You gotta put your hands on them and sit them up. And I'm sure I was just like that. It's aggravating. Quite aggravating. I try to take deep breaths. And I'm trying to walk this balancing line, walk this line between let him get as much sleep as we possibly can and get him up early enough so that they have time to be slow in the morning. And I think we're leaning in favor of, no, what we have to do is train him so that, at least I'm leaning in favor of, and since I'm the one that's up early, Grace is not so much in the loop, but I'm leaning in favor of, let's just train them to, when they wake up, pop out of bed, get dressed, before they can think about how tired they are or whatever. I don't know how much sleep they need. 10 hours. They both got about 10 hours. And when we did get them to bed last night, they just zonked out immediately. So more easily than I did, that's for sure. So maybe they probably could benefit from more than 10 hours. Some parents put their kids down at 7 p.m. and then Grace was saying her friends are wondering what her kids are doing up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Well, because they've gotten their sleep and they're waking up. I have on here, on this little card, all on this itty bitty card. Oops. Sprawl. Grace wanted me to talk about sprawl. I asked her about that. I asked her what topic she'd like to see me do. She doesn't listen to it, but I'll talk about sprawl briefly in the context of Halloween. I have another lap to do, and then I'll call my walk done. I'm slowing down a little. Start the day off with a large coffee. So Halloween's coming up, and this is a traditional old neighborhood in Saginaw. It must be considered a good neighborhood. Even though we're in it, I can't imagine. It has sidewalks and it's a boulevard. People are out walking various times of day, such as I am now. Even when it's cold, such as it is now. And it's really, it has the feeling of being a place. Not like a piazza in Rome or something like that. But it's been here since about 1920-something. That's when the neighborhood was put in. And before that, I hear it was a racetrack. Though I can't quite credit that because I think it's too narrow. But as far as American cities go, aside from places in New England that have been there since, you know, early the colonial period, it counts as being here for a while. It counts as an older community. On Halloween we get, what was the number last time? Something on the order of 900 or 1,000 kids coming to our door. And it's because they're all coming in from other neighborhoods. I'm not sure exactly where they come from. It would be interesting if someone was studying that. I have a video up on one of the sites that shows, in fast forward, all the kids coming to our door. It's pretty impressive. I think they're mostly coming from two kinds of areas. One is city areas that are not considered safe for kids to walk in. And that's good chunks of Saginaw. There are some very high crime areas around here. Some of the most dangerous neighborhoods in the country are 2 miles from here. So that would be one kind of place. The parents don't take their kids around their own neighborhoods. They take them around our neighborhood and probably a few others. The other place people come from is the suburbs. You cross a couple roads and you're in the township, and they don't pay city taxes, and I don't even know if they pay city water bills like we do, like $100 a month. I don't know if they pay for rubbish pickup like we do. I don't know. I'm not sure. But they built a lot of those township neighborhoods on cul-de-sacs in this sprawl pattern without sidewalks. So there really is no good place for the kids to walk. They can't even easily go door-to-door in their own neighborhoods for trick-or-treating safely without walking in the street. So they come here. That's not to say that I'm resentful of it. I'm not resentful of it. It doesn't cost us anything except a pile of candy once a year. But it's strange. It's strange that people would build and live in a place without sidewalks and think that was okay. Or even that that was legal. I mean, it could, that's the kind of thing a township could regulate. They could say, if you put in homes and neighborhood, they have to have sidewalks. They could say you have to have parks. I can't imagine this neighborhood without a sidewalk, without tree lawns. It would be, some people would still go out and walk in the street because it's so quiet that you can walk in the street safely. There's no fast traffic barreling through it, usually. But no one would meet their neighbors. No one would get to know what anyone was up to. Kids would have to drive everywhere. There, you know, we don't have a neighborhood grocery to speak of. We have some party stores that are walkable, and we go by there once in a while, but there's no grocery, like there's no place that actually has produce other than maybe a couple bananas, you know, within a quick walk. If we wanted beer, if you wanted cigarettes, if you wanted junk food, then we're in business. And sometimes I do stop at Bill's Party Store and pick up some locally made donuts or something like that. They're not Tim Hortons. They're not that great, but they're made nearby. They're not Hostess or some brand like that. They're not packaged in cellophane. But we also have Fuzzy's Diner within a quick walk. And there's a record store I walked to. And there are some thrift shops. And I can walk to the place I get my hair cut, although it's a little farther. So there are some services, some stores. Not much. There's still no cafe. Much to my ongoing sadness. But if we were in the township with no sidewalks, our sense of community would be even more deadened. It would be even less. It would be even lessened by the design. The sun's coming up and it's right in my face now. It's kind of welcome though. There's frost on the ground. It's the first morning. Everything's been covered with frost that I've been out, at least. And I can't quite imagine living like that. That there would be no park to walk to, no diner, no little grocery, no nothing. It would be better if there was more. It'd be better if we had something like the Jefferson Market here that actually sold food. Although, because of the size of our family, we still need to find a place where we really could buy things like canned goods and bulk beans and meat in larger quantities, lower unit price. So we wouldn't be able to do all our shopping at a place that was a neighborhood grocery that had to charge more. I don't think we could. But we certainly could do some of it. And I certainly would. If there was a cafe within, oh, a mile. I would be there every morning. There is a restaurant, there's a cafe within, how far is the Red Eye? It's 2.5 miles. Maybe, I'll have to look it up on Google Street Maps or something and see, because I could walk there, but then it's 2.5 mile back, and that's probably just longer than I have. It's more time than I have. It's pushing it a little. There's some slightly closer things downtown, but they're not very good. By downtown, I mean on the river. Rocket has stuck her head out. To say hi to me as I walk by. I've got half a lap to go. I didn't have a lot of materials prepared on Sprawl or do a lot of thinking about it. So I guess I'm just musing on the most basic practical aspects of it. And maybe the spiritual aspect of it. What it would mean to be, to live in a place that was no place. I remember visiting some friends who lived in a subdivision, and after dinner we went out for a walk with them to look around the neighborhood, and they lived there. They had lived there for several years, and they got lost in their own neighborhood, trying to lead us around to walk to a nearby park. James Howard Kunstler has a book called The Geography of Nowhere, and it's a little out of date, I think. It's a few years old. Things have not gotten better. What's going to kill them is the basic logistics, the cost. So we can talk about their aesthetics and their desirability. We can talk about white flight, which really should, that's not an old thing. It's not an out of date thing. It's not an ancient history topic. We can talk about people's terror of living in mixed race neighborhoods. But the thing that's going to kill them is the cost, because the sprawl was built out on cheap gas, relatively good middle class incomes, low housing costs, and the fact that there was money to invest in infrastructure in the form of cheap credit or basically fake growth. There's a book called Strong Towns, and a guy I've talked about with Rich before, who travels around and does programs and tries to get people interested in what's really happening with sprawl. And urban design. And his thesis is that these places are basically bankrupt. All of them. Pretty much all of them. And any city proposing new development is literally involved in a Ponzi scheme to try and pay for old development, where what's really happening is the old development was paid for in debt, and it's now wearing out, and the infrastructure needs to be serviced, needs to be rebuilt. The typical scenario is water and sewer. They need to be dug up and rebuilt. And the money for that, it was treated as a, isn't there, it was treated as a one-time expense, but the idea of recurring maintenance of these big built-out infrastructure projects was not accounted for, and it wasn't set aside, it wasn't saved. It was, the idea was that the growth, the continuing growth in revenues, in everything, would fund all that in the future. Endless growth was the basic model for how that was to be paid for. And that hasn't been the case for cities, for incomes, for the middle class, for uh, 30 years or more, for their tax bases, for their revenues, for their this and that. And honestly, the utopian post-war boom ended around 1972. The minimum wage peaked. The value of the minimum wage peaked in 1968. Well, that was one. And our ability to actually fund these grand suburban dreams declined, started to decline as soon as we decided that our civic duty of paying taxes was actually an intolerable burden, and not both the privilege and the cost of citizenship. So I know I'm speaking slowly, maybe I sound like William Shatner. I'm thinking my way through this topic as I go, so maybe call this an outline or a sketch, but it saddens and frustrates me. There was a city neighborhood on the other side of town, Jefferson, Washington area, out towards the now mostly defunct GM complex that powered Saginaw all through the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, ever, basically since the lumber boom ended, and which has been collapsing since the 80s. I don't know when it really started to shut down. But a neighborhood. I've taken photographs of it. There's less and less of it every few days now because they're knocking down houses. A lot of houses knocking down. It was a beautiful neighborhood for the most part. Grace's mother lived there. They moved here around in the early 90s, mid 90s, late 90s, I forget. I didn't know Grace until 2000. So around 2000, they moved, maybe. And they bought a number of houses in that neighborhood and had a dream of revitalizing a chunk of that neighborhood and basically selling or giving these houses to their various children who would live there or raise families there. It's a neighborhood out by the old train station. That neighborhood is being demolished. Several of those houses have already been demolished. Several others of them are collapsing. There's a beautiful brick building that could be renovated because brick buildings decay more slowly, but it would take a massive effort. But it's not going to collapse physically anytime soon, even though there are windows gone and the roof is rotted. It could be renovated. It still has the good bones of a beautiful old Italianate home. It's sitting empty for lack of anyone to invest in it. And that neighborhood is now a few homes remaining in bulldozed lots and houses that are actually collapsing. That neighborhood was a real place. Grace's mother called it the Jewel Box. She tried to get some civic pride going and came up with a little community newsletter and tried to organize things for her neighbors and was constantly doing things to help them out. Now Grace's brother Jim still lives there, and he doesn't feel like he can leave that house for more than a couple hours pretty much at random, because people will back trucks up to his house and garage and pull out crowbars and start trying to break in and steal everything he has. And he doesn't even have that much. There's nothing worth stealing. That's the frustrating part. I mean, that's to steal a lawnmower. A beat-up, used lawnmower, you know. Because it might be worth something. Not because it's worth much. Anyway. Meanwhile, the suburbs are doing their thing. But we couldn't participate in that. We couldn't afford it. And we didn't want to. And I would say everything we've been trying to do is to figure out a lifestyle that will be affordable in the future, as far as raising some food, being close to local food, trying to reduce our heating expenses, and trying to reduce our driving. So ask yourself what you'll do when you can't drive, or when driving has to be reserved for emergencies and special occasions, if you could make one trip a week. And if that's very different than the way you live now, if you're not already, if that wouldn't be an intolerable, if that would be an intolerable burden, if it would throw everything into complete chaos, then I'm not saying that we're prepared, especially for the changes that are coming down the pike, but we're doing our best. I hope you are too. All right, I gotta go. Take care.